This show was first broadcast on Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. For more information on our lineup of shows and the role we play in the media, visit freefm.org.nz.
Behind the Reins, the story of the D.B. Clydesdales and the Kiwi family by Nick van der Sand. Adapted for radio on Free FM 89.0 in the series Historic Souvenirs. Broadcast by Free FM 89.0. Proudly supported by New Zealand On Air. To account for this interest and love of horses, my great-grandfather, who served the whole of his career in India, and my Dutch grandfather served as officers in the British Army. Later, when the Great War comes, my father's taken prisoner as an agricultural student. The Germans put him to hard labour in Poland, digging trenches and harvesting potatoes, till he makes an amazing escape, finds his way to England to join the British Army. There he meets the English woman he'll later marry, my mother. I grow up with animals and always know I want to be around horses, but it's a long wait before I'm able to own one. My family and grandparents headed to New Zealand in 1951 after purchasing a sheep and dairy farm. My grandfather, dad and uncle all worked together on the development of the farm. All the men have horses, and I have early memories of sitting in front of the saddle as they go about their stockwork. With quite a bit of development complete, and the womenfolk becoming a little homesick, my grandfather sells up and moves everyone back to England, where he purchases a farm in Devon. I'm almost 5 years old when he returns. I start school at Buckfastleigh. It's not long before my parents decide to return to New Zealand on their own, as at this stage an uncle is living here. The Rangitoto births with us on board on my 6th birthday, the 12th of July, 1955. I've called New Zealand home ever since. My parents initially buy a property in West Auckland. Then we have a few years at Helensville, where I think I had my first pony ride on a friend's pony during the holidays. Then there's a move into Auckland, and I complete my secondary schooling at Auckland Grammar School. At this stage, I've taken a great interest in sailing and consider a career at sea, but also contemplate becoming a veterinarian. My grandfather had by this time also returned to New Zealand, buying a dairy farm at Waihui, near Dargaville. The temptation to go farming is too strong, so I leave school partway through my final year and work first for my grandfather and later for my dad. And my parents lie at rest in the Pirongia Cemetery. When it comes time for me to face the future, I save every penny I can till I'm in a position to afford a horse of my own. I'm 18 years old, attending the annual dog and horse sale at the Mangawhare Sale Yards in Dargaville. But it's barely enough to bid on. I see many horses pass through the sale ring. Towards the end of the sale, I'm the successful bidder. Likely the only one, apart from that man who seeks bargains for the knacker's yard. The success of my bid spares that fate for a horse older than myself, and I'm 18. He's quite possibly well into his 20s. A bay with a touch of Clydesdale, and he cost me £12. I was very happy. At last I own a horse. He could have been far lap for all I'm concerned. I couldn't have been happier. While we live in Auckland, I managed to get a few riding lessons as a teenager, but only really know the basics. My mother names my horse Honest Joe, as he does everything I ask of him, is gentle and kind. It's obvious he's been a stock horse, as he's quite happy to draft cows. I regularly ride him out after milking to check for bloat and bring cows back to the shed if they require drenching. He'd even pull things when I need him to, such as the calf feeder from paddock to paddock. The valley where we live is just along the road from an experienced stockman and horseman named Jim Bell. Jim teaches me about horsemanship and lots about the bush, flora and fauna and the land. Most Sundays he'll come by and we'll ride out to a large government block of native bush looking for wild pigs. One day I go to Tangatūrurua to watch people play polo. On the tail of a family property, they kindly find a horse for me and suggest I give it a go. It's fun. So I then built a horse crate for my old De Soto truck. The next weekend, I'm back with Joe loose in the crate. I jump him off the truck onto a bank, as there's no unloading facility, and I realize that if I want to play polo seriously, I need several young, fast horses. I get to know several of the country's top polo players, who are more than happy to give good advice. But I soon become aware that, as a younger dairy farmer, I will just have to wait. I buy another horse at the Dargaville sale a year later, a little chestnut thoroughbred. We call her Honey. I later learn she's been banned from playing polo as she's too excitable and dangerous, which becomes obvious when one day, out riding, she becomes very agitated at the sight of a wild sow with piglets and throws her head violently, striking me, knocking me out. When I come to, she's gone. So I set off, walking home. Meanwhile, Honey had turned up riderless, much to the dismay of my parents. I did enjoy many more rides with Honey and grew quite fond of her. But she broke my finger during one of her moments, leaving me with a permanently crooked digit. Still, being very keen but gullible, I buy a young, newly broken-in horse from a horse dealer and rodeo rider who lives in the area. I ride Blue at his property. He seems quiet at the time, well-behaved. I like him. So I write a check and rode him home. Blue's a little light in condition for my liking. So he goes out onto one of our nice cow paddocks with good grass. But after a few days, my nice, sensible horse has morphed into a different animal, bucking like a bronc, uncontrollable. He's used to being worked hard every day, and most likely has not been fed enough. Another learning curve. Back at the Dargaville horse sale, I buy Peepy. He's bred by a family who I know about, that he had been quickly broken in by some Australian rodeo riders working for a bit of extra money while here, competing. Peepy could buck, and I had several spills. Even though we don't cover a lot of ground together, I enjoy riding him. By now, my grandfather had died, and my grandmother decided to sell the farm. I leave Joe on the farm for the new owner's children to ride, an agreement that suited us well. My parents then buy their own farm at Hakaru, between Kaiwaka and Mangawhai. We move our herd south by driving them to the railway yards in Dargaville, which takes the whole of a day using my horse and dogs. The cows, loaded into the wagons that evening, are transported during the night to Kaiwaka. The next morning we arrive and commence the long walk to the farm. This involves crossing a highway and passing some shops without causing too much havoc or losing any along the way. By this time, I've two great dogs, Missy and Sweep, who works tirelessly all day to stop cows entering driveways, gateways, or just not keeping up. Sweep and I stay at the back to keep things moving, and Missy has everything else sorted. She's one of the best dogs I ever own, and it's only when we finally arrive at the farm that I look at her feet. They're raw! The tar seal's worn the skin off, and she's spoilt for a couple of weeks to let her heal and get back to her enthusiastic self. I've not long been at Hakaru before meeting Kevin Shulmandere Smith, a well-known horse breeder and judge. Kevin lives on a property by the beach, and I start going to his place to ride and make friends with his grooms. I'm lucky enough to have some good tuition from Kevin, and from the girls a bit of dressage and jumping. Kevin also introduces me to hunting with hounds. He even lends me an old, experienced hunter called Colorado, or Darky, who's been hunting regularly, often twice a week, with the Pakuranga hunt. I enjoy many good hunts with Darky, and in the summer, I also take him to local shows. So I decide Mano could do with a good rest and some good grass. He turns into a beautiful, solid 16.2-handed gentleman. Mano's a full wire hunter, and during the summer we compete at A&P shows and jumping competitions between the hunt seasons. Manolito also turns his hand to stockwork, and when I later work on the Whakaroa station, he's very useful. At about this time, a girl called Jill enters my life, accompanied by her ex-steeplechaser, Tawa Mahal, known as Joe. My brother-in-law and Jill's dad work next door to each other in Penrose at the time, and possibly do some matchmaking. Jill phones me one evening. We discuss Joe, whom she's extremely fond of. But she has to find him a new home, and she only wants the best for him. He has some scarring from a recent paddock accident and will remain needing a little extra care. So possibly a paddock mate with a little riding, and he's now close to 20. I already have two horses, and they are definitely not lonely and live on a dairy farm, so don't really need one. But as I listen, I like the sound of her voice. She sounds like someone I'd like to meet, and with similar interests. I suggest she brings Joe up to Kaiwaka. Jill arrives with her mum and dad, Joe, and her boyfriend. However, the boyfriend does excuse himself to visit some family in the area. I ask Jill, would she like to go for a ride over the farm? She jumps at the chance, even though it's a showery day, and we come back drenched. I think this is the beginning of something very special. Before long, Jill, a school dental nurse in Auckland, is hopping into her little white mini and driving to Kaiwaka after work on Friday, where she would usually find me in the shed milking. She'll be straight in to help, obviously enjoying it. The next morning, she'll walk with me to get the cows and help with the milking before returning to the house for the traditional cooked breakfast.
Hello, everyone. My name is Louise Gilmore, or previously Louise Vandersand, prior to getting married. I am Nick and Jill's youngest daughter, and it is my privilege to be reading out Jill's story, my mother's. My parents ran a small riding and tiring horse establishment in Sunrise Avenue, Mairangi Bay, in the 1950s and 1960s. It was originally part of the Maxwell family dairy farm and had become a new subdivision that still had lots of paddocks and land around. I would have been only just walking and possibly 2 years old when I was placed in front of a saddle, even though too small to hold on. When I was old enough to hold on by myself, I was put behind over the saddlebags, while my mother and her friends took their usual two-hour Saturday morning rides around the bay. We usually left from our home and took a long loop through the bay. up Hastings Road along East Coast Road and back. The other alternative was Rosedale Road or up Beach Road to Ross Bay Bay. Obviously, traffic was slower. Some of the roads were unsealed. It was a nice, quiet plod walking, and where we could find grass verges, we took to the well-worn track on the side for a chop or a quiet canter. The horses were all quiet, and many were purchased from Bob Saunders, a well-known horse dealer who always treated my mother well. However, I do remember a truck arriving at our door one day on the way to the local meatworks with a Part Bay Clydesdale mare on board. Only about 15 hands, pretty, with a white blaze which took my mother's eye. Bob Saunders said, "You won't catch her, and she kicks. If you give me £4, she's yours, but I have to warn you." Marie stayed with us for years, but she did kick, and we never could catch her in the paddock. I remember another horse very well, Bob, a black gelding, mainly Clydesdale, who my brother Dennis, along with a couple of friends, decided would be good in harness. Well, things turned bad quickly, but fortunately, an adult showed up and managed to catch the terrified horse and rescued the also terrified children from their hiding place. I have a feeling my parents were never told about that. It was probably about this time that my huge animal collection got going. I had inherited a great love of animals from my mother, and we collected cats, chickens, orphaned lambs, goats, and anything else needing a home that my mother and I could get our hands on. During the mid-1960s, housing was developing in Sunrise Avenue, and our riding school was just in operation, moved to Aaron Road and Browns Bay, where much more land was available. By now, my brother Dennis and I had our own ponies. Tommy, a cute roan, and Denisa, a black pony my mother had bred from her lovely grey mare Donegal. From about the age of five, we regularly rode the Glenborough Road to attend Tall Bay Pony Club, along with a group of others who grazed their ponies with us. This was great fun, a long ride for me, being the youngest. We would duck through sections and take shortcuts, grabbing fruit here and there off trees, escaping usually without being caught, and finally arrive at Glenborough Road, where Long Bay College now stands. We had very well-behaved ponies in those days. There were not many horse floats around, and if we went to a show or far away, we always went on a stock truck. It was here at Pony Club that I met Kevin Chumley Smith, who owned the well-known Glenbar Stud, which was adjacent to the Pony Club. Years later, Kevin was to become a mentor for my husband Nick and introduced him to hunting a couple of years before I met him. By the late 1960s, and now in my teens, and still mad keen on animals, I had left Murray's Bay Primary and Murray's Bay Intermediate Schools and went to Westlake Girls High. I became more serious about eventing and show jumping and talked my father into towing my horse float around the country to competitions, something he was very supportive of, although he insisted he never really liked horses and even shod them for us. It was through my dad that I was lucky enough to be given my wonderful ex-steeplechaser, Tawamahol, Joe, who I successfully competed in both show jumping and eventing through my teenage years, and who, unbeknownst to Joe, introduced me to my husband, Nick. After I finished school, I trained as a school dental nurse at Edenvale, Mount Eden, and secured my first position at Cornwall Park School. I was still living at home, and my weekends were taken up by the three horses I had owned and competed with. My father and his friend Jim did a little matchmaking, and somehow it was discovered that I was looking for a good retirement home for my beloved Joe. Jim's brother-in-law, Nick, he said, loved horses and was living and working on his parents' dairy farm in Kaiwaka. After a couple of phone conversations, my parents, Joe, and I arrived in Kaiwaka, and Nick and I went for a ride up the farm. He kindly invited me back the following weekend to go on a hunt with him, as he had by then met my friend Kevin Chumley Smith, who had encouraged him to get involved in hunting. The club was new. Kevin was the master, and Russell, another friend from my childhood pony club days, was huntsman, so I fitted in well. I continued to hunt with the Northern County, now Waipara, hunt most of that hunt season. Nick did, from time to time, come to Auckland to visit. But as he was a dairy farmer, it was usually me doing the travelling. I guess I just fell for the tall, dark-haired dairy farmer who also loved my horse, Joe. We married the following January in 1977 after a romance of about 6 months. So Joe, my other two horses, and I moved to a very cute restored cottage just up from his parents' farm in Browns Road, Kaiwaka, where they milked 220 cows. From the first day of meeting Nick, I loved the farm life and the cows, and helped with milking at every opportunity. Joe and I would often head off up the farm to collect the girls. We moved to Taupo when they secured a shepherding job with the Department of the Land Survey at Taupo, 6,000 acres. We loaded up our double horse float with Joe and Mano, Nick's hunter, Bonnie the pet calf under their heads, Blue, Sweep, Missy and Sam the working dogs on the back seat, and Tina and Tui, our two kittens, in the front. The chickens went in the removal van. After a terribly long trip with electrical and mechanical problems, we finally arrived at our house to find that we could not get in, and it was far too late to wake the manager, so we slept in the cold car. Early the next morning, we heard a horse. Help, finally. Dennis Gloyne and his wife Karen immediately became good and lifelong friends. Dennis and Nick spent long hours working and riding together, and Karen and I both worked in Taupo. We shared many meals and laughs together. Joe became a good stock horse, and Nick kept him fit on the station along with the other horses, and we both continued hunting with the Taupo Hunt. The country was big, as were the fields, and you either jumped whatever was in front of you or you went miles to the next gate. Nick and I purchased a small dairy farm west of Puhoi in June 1979 and moved again, but this time it was with a few more pets and, of course, our beloved horses, which seemed to be gathering in numbers. The property was a small dairy farm of about 250 acres, but only milking just over 100 cows, a mixture of Ayrshires, some Frisians and Jerseys. We had undeveloped land at the back of the farm to be bought in. The land was not easy, but we had both worked hard to improve it and loved the lifestyle. However, I needed a job off the farm to bring in extra income, so I worked as a local school dental nurse again at both Cow Copper Copper and Walkworth. I will never forget the frustration of having to go off the farm. I just really wanted to be home with Nick and the animals. We developed a nucleus of pedigree Ayrshire cows, even getting involved with a little showing with our pedigree bull, Rata. At the time, we were fortunate enough to be given Molly, a stocky crossbred mare who had bad laminitis, a severe problem causing deterioration of the hooves due to becoming overweight. Molly was destined to be dog food, but with months of careful diet and special shoeing, she became incredibly useful for us on the farm, especially when I was not at home to help feed out. Molly knew it all and taught us well. We made a crate for an old sledge. She would collect the calves from the paddock, feed out hay, take calves to the bobby calf collection point at the end of the road and carry anything we put on her. Being a very wet farm with heavy soil, the old Nuffield tractor was not used much during the winter. I do think, though, that our neighbours, even then in the late 1970s, thought that we were a little odd. During this time, our hunting took a bit of a backseat, but we rode for pleasure and to collect the cows whenever we could get a chance. Next up, he would like to learn more and gained experience with working horses. We heard about a course that was being advertised by the Nelson Polytechnic that taught skills in draft horse work. The course was to be held on the property belonging to Fergus O'Connor, a reputable Clydesdale horse breeder who later supplied most of the DB horses and had by then become a good friend. To this day, we still regard Fergus as the finest Clydesdale breeder and certainly the most knowledgeable in New Zealand. The course was about a week long and was of great interest and benefit to Nick, who had then decided that we should be getting some purebred Clydesdales. On the way home from the course, Nick dropped into Tikawiti to view a young Clydesdale stallion, which had been advertised for sale by a breeder, Michael Bent. Nick and Michael came to an agreement, and later that evening, Nick arrived home with a new stallion, with Side Captain in tow. Molly was the first to foal a colt by Captain, a lovely bay called Mac, who after a slow start grew to be a small crossbred, who was sold as a farm hack. The following year, Monty was born. He later became a well-known horse in the Bay of Plenty hunt scene. He bred numerous successful crossbreds by Captain, many going on to be hunters and show jumpers, and his fillies were great broodmares. Captain spent his last days with a huntsman at the Bay of Plenty Hunt Club. He was used for breeding sport horses, and I believe he died there. In 1980, we moved to a larger farm. This farm was located on a beautiful spot at the end of a road in the Kaipara Hills and overlooked the harbour. The property was close to Mount Auckland and Kaipara Harbour. We had 2,000 Perendale ewes and about 20 nurse cows, mainly our older and favourite girls from the dairy farm who served us well, each rearing up to 6 calves over the season. We also grazed dairy heifers during the winter and ran a small horse breeding operation with 2 stallions. Nick and I rode daily while mustering cattle and sheep. We had no house and no electricity and we lived in a caravan. We had lots of fun, however. We eventually had a house built, which we finished ourselves whilst living in it. At last, we had some electricity. We loved our new house and its peaceful surroundings. Sadly, our small hill property couldn't really support farming operations, And with Samantha on the way, we decided to take the offer of a picturesque 50-acre property on the outskirts of Warkworth in exchange for our hill country property. We were told by the local land agent that the property had valuable potential for industrial subdivision in future. It seemed like a win-win situation for us. The new farm was a dream property for us. It was well set up for calf rearing and enabled us to rear 300 calves a year. This included Friesian, Friesian Cross and some Sahiwal calves for export. We also dabbled in a little white veal, which went to the Parnell Butchers in Auckland. Nick worked at the local milk treatment station to bring in a few extra dollars. I worked part-time as assistant to a dentist in Warkworth while I was pregnant with Samantha, who was born on the 2nd of September 1984. My cousin, Claire Payne, and I had always been close friends and rode together through our teenage years. Claire would come to stay and ride with us whenever possible. Over a few drinks one night, Claire said, wouldn't it be great if we could persuade one of the two major New Zealand breweries to have a team of horses like they do in other countries overseas? We suggested they could use Clydesdales to promote their product throughout the country. Europe has many heavy horse teams connected to breweries, like Heineken, Young's, Whitbread, and so on. Australia has Carlton's United, and then there's the famous Budweiser Clydesdales in America. These teams, although varying in size and popularity, have been successful in their own right. We agreed with Claire. It would be a fantastic idea. However, we both had concerns that New Zealand was possibly too small to accommodate such an operation, and that the two main breweries certainly wouldn't entertain the idea. We did, however, consider it and decided to put a proposition together and then approach New Zealand Brewery. We met with a semi-enthusiastic marketing person who said it would possibly work, but Nick and I would need to supply the horses, harness, vehicles and trucks, and they might possibly call on us from time to time when required for events. It was the sort of response we expected. We then decided to approach New Zealand Brewery's main opposition, Dominion Brewery, DB, in Otahu. We did finally get in the door and a little further, but they weren't interested. What we discovered later, however, was that the heavy horse operation was already in the pipeline and plans were underway, but it was very much under wraps. We left feeling quite dejected and wondered what we could do next. We were both working very hard in several jobs and not getting ahead at all. We had a huge mortgage and had discovered that the land agent had put us wrong about the property. The industrial zoning we had been led to believe would include our property actually went the other direction and wouldn't touch our land at all. We'd been totally misled into believing that we were sitting on a real estate gold mine. Things looked rather gloomy for us now.
Tune in next week to find out what happens to the Van der Sand family. It'll be another edition of Historic Souvenirs from the book Behind the Reins by Nick Van der Sand. This is broadcast on Free FM 89.0, proudly supported by New Zealand.
For more episodes, use the accessmedia.nz app for iOS and Android devices, or subscribe to this podcast via Spotify, iHeartRadio, or Apple Podcasts. This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.